Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. After 8 controversial years, No Child Left Behind is becoming American education history. This week, President Obama and Education Secretary Arne Duncan unveiled a new blueprint for schools. It's a pretty complete overhaul. Annual math and reading tests, out. College and career readiness, in. So is this stepping up, giving up, a better way? This hour on Point Beyond, No Child Left Behind, and what it will take to get education right in America. You can join the conversation. What have we learned from the No Child Left Behind era? What do you see coming next? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Education Secretary Arne Duncan, at a House hearing on education yesterday, made it clear he didn't want this to be seen as Washington insiders imposing a new plan on the nation's schools.
Sir, let me be very, very clear. This blueprint, the ideas didn't come from geniuses in Washington. These ideas came from teachers and parents and principals and students around this country. The previous law was too punitive, it was too prescriptive, it lowered the bar for children, and it narrowed the curriculum. And what we want to do is we want to raise the bar, we want to have meaningful standards, we want to reward excellence, we want to increase local flexibility, and we want students to have a well-rounded curriculum.
Arne Duncan looking to sell his blueprint yesterday as he would send No Child Left Behind on down the river. Joining me now in the studio is Jonathan Kaufman. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter and education editor at Bloomberg News. He's been following the rollout of the new education blueprint and its reception by lawmakers and educators. Jonathan Kaufman, it's great to see you. What do you see in this new package? Is this a revolution away from No Child Left Behind? Are we really done with all that?
Well, it's certainly an effort to try to inject more flexibility into what was seen as a very rigid program. Basically, what the original No Child Left Behind did was set up very rigid standards, a pass-fail system to try to evaluate schools and how they were doing. And I think there was a tremendous backlash on the part, certainly, of teachers and even some parents who felt that a lot was lost. So, for example, now instead of saying that everyone has to be tested just on math and English, they want to also test people on sciences. On social sciences to sort of broaden the curriculum. The other main thing they want to do is to focus on the lowest performing schools, to say that if you're a high achieving school and you're doing well, there's federal money that will go that will try to support you and try to, you know, increase ways in which you can teach students. But they really want to focus on the bottom 5% of schools that are underachieving. And they're prepared to be very punitive in that sense. The whole Rhode Island firing of teachers controversy, I think is part of that. And they do, despite what Duncan says, want to have more of a national curriculum. They're trying to do this in a way through a back door by having governors and states come up with standards that will then become a national standard and not come from Washington. But the main thing they want to do is to just have more flexibility. For local schools. The problem with that is, how do you do that but still maintain pressure and still maintain standards in all these schools? Money's going to be a big part of it. There's huge pots of money now in various programs, billions of dollars, that they want to use to try to force schools to be innovative, to encourage those that are.
A carrot that will be.
Exactly. And the other thing, which I think is potentially the most interesting, is they really want to use data to measure student performance, not just in testing, but they want to find a way in which they can actually track single teachers and students and see how kids are learning under certain teachers, which they think will give them more ability to identify high-performing teachers and poor teachers and really zero in on how kids learn in a classroom.
So a big focus on the poorest performing schools here, in that case a focus on the 5%, but it can sound like this means the other 95% are off the hook, that the pressure of No Child Left Behind has gone away, has it?
Well, I think that's what some of the critics say, is that, you know, one of the things about No Child Left Behind was that it did make schools aware of racial disparities, of special needs issues. All schools were held accountable for this.
And I think one of the things...
And
test scores.
And test scores.
For all the... unhappiness about those tests.
Right. And so I think one of the things that people worry about is that if you just focus on the 5%, what's going to happen in a high-achieving school district that may have some achievement gaps between Black and Hispanic kids and white kids?
Will that be tracked anymore, Jonathan, under this?
Well, that's part of what the debate is going to be over. The Obama administration says they do intend to track it. They've already brought a lawsuit in Los Angeles because they feel that English language learners are not being treated well in Los Angeles. They say they're going to monitor these things. But I think one of the fears people have is that education is such a huge, sprawling bureaucracy. Once you let the pressure off, is there a return to inertia? Do school districts just go their own way? And without that constant pressure of testing, will people start to fall through the cracks?
Can we focus on something just very practically, because I'm not sure I have it yet. What is the change, or is it clear, in what testing will be? I mean, everybody's been tested upside down and sideways. Now, with different standards, state by state, and I know that's controversial under No Child Left Behind, but there's been testing all over the place. Does that go away here? Or not? Or does it morph, and if so, how?
My impression is there will still be testing, but it may test different things. For example, one of the things that they're going to test is, let's say you're a second grader and you come into fourth grade. You're a fourth grader. You come in reading at a second grade reading level.
Okay.
At the end of the year, you're reading at a third grade reading level. Under No Child Left Behind, you're considered failing because you're not up to a fourth grade reading level. What the Obama people want to say is that when we test you, we'll see that you made progress from second grade to third grade. That means your teacher in the school is doing a good job because you advanced. You had some distance traveled there.
You made some progress, but the No Child Left Behind idea was, hey, no soft bigotry of low expectations. Even just advancing isn't enough. We want properly, minimally at least, educated American kids. Is that gone?
The problem with that was that they left the testing and the definition of proficiency or of passing mm-hmm. these tests to the states. And what happened was 15 states actually lowered their standards in order to get
to make
the federal
the cut,
money.
To make the, mm-hmm.
So it wasn't the soft bigotry of low expectations. It was the soft bigotry of lower test standards. In other words, just to get the money, they were able to lower the scores that were necessary to pass.
But if this new blueprint is not a stand down, as I read it, they're pushing the deadline, the time for proficiency, or what do they call it, college and career readiness,
right,
to the year 2020, not 2014.
Right.
Why? That's a decade from now. I mean, it looks like we've punted on what the goal was here.
Well, I think that's true. I think it's very easy to read this as, I mean, first of all, what does college ready mean? These new standards that are coming out from the governors have some certain concrete things. For example, you're supposed to be able to read Tom Sawyer in middle school and Emily Dickinson in high school.
Sounds reasonable.
And that all makes sense. But I think the key thing is going to be, what are the benchmarks along the way? If we wait till 2020, it'll be a new world by then and kids will have graduated. I think the real key is going to be, year by year, can they keep on pushing kids up the ladder so that they are college ready?
Here's Arne Duncan again yesterday, testimony before the House and Education and Labor Committee, saying that No Child Left Behind's accountability system needs to be fixed now.
There are way too many perverse incentives. It allows, even encourages, states to lower standards. It doesn't measure growth, and it doesn't reward excellence. It prescribes the same interventions for schools with very different needs. It encourages a narrowing of the curriculum and focuses on test preparation. It labels too many schools with the same failing label, regardless of their challenges.
Arne Duncan saying it's time to move beyond No Child Left Behind, but it wasn't all sweet acceptance yesterday. In a Q&A with Duncan, Republican Congressman Peter Hoekstra from Michigan explained here why he's wary of embracing yet another plan from Washington on how to fix his district's schools.
My local schools are already telling me it's kind of like we just got done with one system, and most of them didn't like it. One bad system that has put in a tremendous amount of cost and bureaucracy into the process, and now we've got, quote-unquote, you geniuses in Washington coming up with the next new approach for us.
Republican Congressman Peter Hoekstra of Michigan yesterday. Joining us right now from Washington is Jeannie Allen. She's president of the Center for Education Reform. It's an advocate for school choice, so public or otherwise, critic of the Obama administration's blueprint, co-author of the School Reform Handbook. Jeannie Allen, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. My pleasure.
So what do you see in the new blueprint, madam?
Well, you know, the contradictions abound, and I've been listening to the conversation with Jonathan. Hi, Jonathan, and his description of No Child Left Behind, which is pretty spot on, except for what the Obama administration is recommending, while well-intentioned, actually doesn't do anything that they're recommending. Let's start with the premise that we're testing too much and we're failing too many schools without measuring growth. The reality is we had more tests before No Child Left Behind. They're called norm reference tests. Those are the kind of bubble tests that our kids take that basically compare them to a bunch of other kids rather than to a standard.
Number two pencil, off
right?
we go.
Those went away, actually, and what they were substituted with was much more rigorous tests, no matter what state you're talking about, that said, are you doing what a fourth grader should be doing in math, and where are you in reading? And those two core courses are hardly make up the entire portfolio or curriculum that a child learns every day, but they are indicators. In fact, they are pathways proven over and over again for success, not only in college and career. And
but so, everybody was hollering about No Child Left Behind. It seemed like nobody was really happy with it.
Well, you know what? Who's happy? The parents and the kids who are actually succeeding more than they were before. Look, the education interest groups never want to have to, and to Hoekstra's point and lots of people's point, no one wants to have to change things every few years, right? But we went from a system where for 30 years, Washington never required states or communities to succeed in order to get federal money, to a system where we said, we want to not only know definitively how your schools are doing, but we're going to hold you to consequences for success or failure. And guess what that did? That actually made people change their behavior. It woke up a nation to the point where today it's okay to say we have a crisis, which we do, and it's not just in the 5% of low-performing schools. We have a crisis even in middle-class America, where our best kids, our most proficient kids, are barely proficient in reading and math. And when you compare it to other countries in this sort of race to the top for competitiveness in the world, we fail over and over again.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the end of No Child Left Behind and what comes next for American education under the Obama blueprint, just being rolled out this week. Jonathan Kaufman is with us. He's education editor at Bloomberg News. Jeannie Allen is with us. She's president for the Center for Education Reform. They advocate for school choice. Democratic Representative Susan Davis of California at the hearings yesterday with Arne Duncan in the House asked why the nation isn't more focused on educating its youth.
I think I'm still looking for a Sputnik-like moment. Is that something that you feel as well, that while there is all this attention, you don't sense that urgency really in the country as a whole?
Jonathan, here's a web comment from Ruth, and she says, new words, succinct bullet points, but what will the real difference be between Arne Duncan's new interpretation of No Child Left Behind and the original new staff and turnaround tactics without a whole new paradigm get us back to square one? Is this a new paradigm, Jonathan?
Well, I don't think, I mean, one of the problems with education is that we don't really know what works. Everyone feels they're an expert because they've been in school or they have kids in school. But, you know, the Gates Foundation has looked at this. Experts have looked at this. We have education schools that look at this. And it's really unclear how you can have one overall blueprint that's going to make an education system succeed. And so I think, you know, giving the Obama administration the benefit of the doubt, what they want to do is try different things. They have a lot of money. So they say, if you come to us with a good proposal that's going to make kids succeed more, we'll give you a couple of $100,000 to see if it can work.
They have a lot of money. Can we pause there for a second? What money is that?
Well, there's
nobody seems to have a lot of money these
days.
Well,
actually, the Education Department is one of the few domestic departments that has more money this year than
from
last year.
From stimulus funds?
From stimulus money, there's $5 billion in the so-called Race to the Top Fund, where schools basically compete to say, we have these innovative programs. We can show you that kids are going to do well.
But that's still a dollop here and a dollop there. That's not more money overall for America.
And except for the fact, excuse me, Tom and John, except for the fact that Race to the Top actually was supposed to say, we'll give you more money for doing great things, what it did was it said, give us an application telling us how you would do great things. And so basically Race to the Top just rewarded a bunch of states for writing really great applications, and only in two or three cases are states actually doing what they said and have proven that they can get it done. And this is one of the challenges right now with federal policy. It's not that No Child Left Behind was perfect, and it's not this blueprint can't work. The fact of the matter is the lion's share of the obligation, responsibility for education, which includes rigorous accountability through testing, because how else do we know if we're succeeding, lies with the states. And the states will do what they have to do to comply with federal rules and dictates. And for a while, the NCLB dictate was, if you don't do these things, there will be a consequence. And that consequence, that stick after the carrot, made people do the right thing for kids for the first time in a long time. And now we're removing that consequence. And I think going back to, say, pre-1980s education, when you got money, you did what you wanted, and no one watched you, and then one day we woke up and found out that we could barely put a rocket ship in space.
Jonathan, no consequences here?
Well,
I thought
no,
there
I
were
think,
still.
No, to be fair to the Obama administration, and this is why the Rhode Island teacher firing incident is so important, Duncan has been very clear about this.
Which they supported.
Exactly. That if a school has been failing, not just in 1 year or 2 years, but over time, there have to be dramatic changes. And in the case of Rhode Island, it was a school that was doing very badly for a long time. The principal stepped in, basically fired the staff, said everyone had to reapply for their jobs. And Obama and Duncan publicly endorsed that.
Right on.
Jonathan,
and so there is, so I think there is,
but
I think there is a, just
happened.
Let me finish.
One moment, please, Jeannie.
There is a stick here. And I think that focusing on these low performing schools, there really is going to be an effort to try to shake them up.
Okay,
now that's
really
complicated because even if you fire all the teachers, how do you get good teachers into those schools?
One of the problems
now is that the best teachers don't go to the worst schools. Very often you have young teachers, you have Teach for America, really ambitious young people who want to teach in these poor schools, but they don't often have the skills to really make them succeed.
Jeannie, is it not a stick when that kind of firing, even the principal's firing, hangs over a school?
No, it's actually a really clear indication of what No Child Left Behind did. Jonathan, Tom, the firing in Central Falls was a result of the 7-year kicker that was implemented in No Child Left Behind. The Obama administration does not have a policy in the books currently that either encourages or requires what you just saw in Central Falls or the closures you're seeing in Kansas City or some of the consolidations in Detroit or elsewhere. That was a No Child Left Behind result.
The new blueprint, I thought had measures in it for letting teachers go, even letting principals go.
Actually, the blueprint says we're going to give you support to help either fix the teachers or encourage you to reconstitute, or in some cases, we will encourage you to close the school. It does not say that you will close the school or that you're even allowed to close the school if you don't meet certain
benchmarks. Does reconstitute mean new staff?
Reconstitute can mean that you rehire some staff or you...
But that means fire and hire others, I assume.
Sometimes.
Well, it sounds like a stick to me. Charles Barone joins us from Washington now. He's Director for Federal Policy at Democrats for Education Reform. Charles, thank you very much for being here.
My pleasure, Tom.
Do you see an advance, a retreat, a paradigm shift in the new blueprint? What, Charles?
I really appreciate how well you laid out the issues, the policy issues, at the beginning of the show. I would take issue with very little, except the last thing Jeannie Allen said. President Obama and Secretary Duncan have pushed more change in their first year than any president in history. When we were at this point in the Bush administration, they had just passed a law. Under Race to the Top, we've seen more than a dozen states change their state laws, change their state plans, and enact new policies. I mean, the shutdown of Central Falls in Rhode Island was a result of the stimulus money. It compels states and districts to undertake fundamental restructuring of schools. So, Tom, you were right. Reconstitution is replacement of staff.
But Jeannie says this takes us back to kind of even pre-1980 era when every school can sort of, maybe not that lowest 5%, but the rest kind of go their own way. Is that a good thing?
I don't think that's what the administration is saying.
Mm-hmm.
I think the pivot here is in local school districts, they're looking for ways to empower themselves, and they see the federal government as a partner in this. And the odd person out here right now is really the teachers' unions. If you're a principal right now, you cannot hire or fire your own staff. You cannot evaluate your teachers and base their advancement or tenure or denial of tenure or postponement of tenure on their evaluations in most places. If you're a principal, you're completely disempowered. And I think what they're doing is trying to empower those folks. What we have not talked about is the incredible blowback this week that the Obama administration got from the teachers unions. And they're out of the debate in terms of where a lot of local principals are, superintendents, and rank and file teachers.
What does that blowback tell you, Charles Barone?
It tells you that there isn't a change in education policy, and I think this is where Jeannie is right, that they're going to be willing to accept that they pretty much want to continue to do things the way they're doing them now. The real game in D.C. this week, I've been on the Hill all week, the NEA and the AFT, they're not in these ESEA hearings as much as they're over at the Appropriations Committee. And they're actively trying to shut down the Obama administration program, Race to the Top, and these other competitive grant programs because they know that's where they can really hold them up.
Jonathan Kaufman, could this turn into a health care-like battle royal over a long time? Does Congress have to sign off on all this?
Right. I mean, I think that there's sort of educational issues involved here, but there's also political issues. And I think that one of the things you saw in the hearing yesterday was Republicans hammering away at very, you know, powerful buzzwords. Federal intrusion, federal mandates, the cost of these programs, national standards. These are things that are not only red meat to the Republican base, but I think are broadly, you know, something that a lot of people worry about, the idea of the government dictating what your child is going to learn and the cost of all these new programs. So I think, like healthcare, you can have one debate about the particulars of the program and what makes sense educationally, but if this gets caught up in the Republican-Democrat, Obama versus Republican debate, it could go off track. And then, I think, as was just pointed out, in a sense to the left, or at least on the union mm-hmm. side, you have the teachers' unions who are also very upset with this and who are attacking the Obama changes as well.
Which presumably is because they think it makes jobs vulnerable?
Well, it also, what they feel, they have never liked any kind of testing. And they feel that this puts more and more responsibility and spotlight on teachers. Why are students are failing because teachers aren't good enough? And they don't want that. They want to have more control in the classroom. They don't want to be held under this kind of spotlight of scrutiny.
But we had Randy Weingarten is
right.
recently on when she was saying, hey, we're open, we're ready to talk.
Yes, but once the proposal was actually there, both she and the head of the National Education Association have come out vehemently against it. So I think in a political sense, you can have Obama now caught in a crossfire.
Jeannie Allen, what do you see? One moment, Charles, if you'd be so kind. Jeannie Allen, what do you see in the union pushback?
Well, there's two things. I mean, first of all, we need to remember that the No Child Left Behind was a bipartisan push. In fact, across the country, Republicans and Democrats like it and don't like it.
Ted Kennedy was in on it, famously.
Okay, Ted Kennedy was in on it, and even today, Republicans and Democrats alike and people with neither like and don't like the blueprint. So this is not a let's push for change in the Obama administration defense or opposition to the Obama administration.
Well, it could certainly be made into that. We've seen many issues pulled into it.
Sure, and that's the problem right now. But this is not about whether Obama did enough in the first year and whether the stimulus led the Central Falls superintendent to fire. She wanted to do that for a long time. She has a new sheriff in town. It's really not tied. We can talk about it all day long, but this isn't about political brownie points. This is about our kids. And the reality is the unions are running around Capitol Hill opposing it because they know if they support it, it is dead on arrival. This is a very clever, these are smart folks. They love the fact there's more money being thrown at ESEA, the Elementary
Why would union support mean DOA?
Because the Obama administration, as well as the Republicans, have prided themselves on not being supposedly captive clientele of the teachers' unions. But frankly, there's nothing in here to make their life miserable, because unlike what Charlie Barone just said, who I adore otherwise, nothing in this blueprint will make you fire a teacher, will make you evaluate them and give them lots more money. That's a collective bargaining district-by-district contract, and the blueprint doesn't change that. No Child Left Behind changed that. All we're talking about here is what do we do with federal money? How do we make sure states and communities account for whether they're educating children or not? And if you're not, do you suffer, or when you are, do you get rewarded?
Charles Barone, what do you say to that?
I couldn't quite follow all of Jeannie's political analysis, but she's right that the collective bargaining agreements at the local level hamstring principals, superintendents, parents, state legislators from enacting the types of reforms that President Obama and Secretary Duncan want.
Mm-hmm.
Tom, I was on the show with you over a month ago with Randi Weingarten.
Oh, that's right. Of course. So many shows, so little time.
Yeah,
right.
She said she was so open to evaluating teacher effectiveness, partly based on test scores,
right.
Looking at every issue. Every issue was on the table. Tenure, advancement, differential pay. We heard all those things. All those things are in the Obama plan, and they're being attacked. And we see that in every instance where at the general level, we hear rhetorically that the national teachers unions, I don't mean rank and file teachers,
yep.
they're willing to embrace some of these things. We heard that on your show from the people that were mm-hmm. calling in.
Yep.
But the leadership is somewhat out of touch with that, and they have not really seen a reform plan yet that they like.
Let's go to a teacher right here, Sarah McMinnville, Tennessee. Sarah, you're on the air.
Thank you. My question has to do with, I'm a music teacher. I teach band at the middle school level.
Great.
And it sounds to me like the new plan is going to be a better, more general, I heard the words, a more well-rounded curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the No Child Left Behind, I've always feared that because it is all test score driven and focusing on math and reading, that things like music and art usually would be put at the bottom and maybe even cut. Luckily, that hasn't happened in my district. But I just wonder if they can address if this new program is going to be more general and more open to.
Yeah, Sarah in McMinnville, we've got it, and I appreciate your call, Jonathan. Do arts come back in this blueprint?
Well, certainly. The idea is that the previous curriculum was just too narrow. That just by focusing on math and English, that's all that people were teaching. They were teaching to the test. So there will be testing of sciences. There will be testing of social sciences. And I suspect that as part of that broadening, I think there is a feeling now that the arts have been pushed away. So in a more well-rounded curriculum, presumably the arts and even things like recess and gym may come back and sort of go against this sort of very rigid approach that was imposed before.
Well, I loved a band in middle school. You keep at it there, Sarah. Don in Grand Ledge, Michigan. Don, you're on the air.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
2 points real quick, and then I'll get off the air. I'm a union person in a different field besides teaching, but
okay.
Rank and file union welcome the opportunity to be held to a higher standard. And I think that the leadership that has to defend, say, the poor teachers aren't going to necessarily like that, but a vast majority of the rank and file in any union welcomes being held to a higher standard. And the second point is
that's what we hear.
Under the Bush administration, I really had a big fear of everything being turned for profit, kind of like our healthcare system. And you notice that the one of your guests that's against it is for charter for profit
yes.
schools.
Yep.
And that's my big concern. And I think the Obama administration will get the for-profit aspect out of it that's ruined our health care system. So thank you.
Don, thank you. Jeannie, we've just got you for another minute here. What do you say to Don's perspective there?
Well, I'm for all education that works, and we herald and applaud quality and herald and applaud high standards. And look, states test all the time in all the issues. I'm married to a music teacher. It's a paramount concern to me and the people I work with. That has nothing to do with No Child Left Behind or even this blueprint. What states do is one thing, holding them accountable for federal money. We have to decide the best way to do this. This is one way. There are lots of other ways as well.
Jeannie Allen, president of the Center for Education Reform, advocate there for school choice, author of the School Reform Handbook. Jeannie, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Charles, you sound like you think this is going to be better. It's so big that it's hard to get hands around. How do you think the public's going to receive it as it really gets laid out over these next months?
I think it will take a while for the public to digest it. But what we've seen over the last year, where a lot of these same elements in the blueprint were laid out under the stimulus and race to the top, is that it's been embraced at the state and local level, that they've taken up the challenge and they've enacted reforms very different from state to state, very different from locality to locality, but Republican, Democrat, parent, teacher, superintendent, principal, I think they will embrace this.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the end of No Child Left Behind and what comes next for American education under the newly unveiled Obama plan. Jonathan Kaufman, education editor at Bloomberg News, is with us. Charles Barone is here. He is director of federal policy at Democrats for Education Reform. We heard earlier from Jeannie Allen, who likes charter schools. Let's go to a public school right now in Lincoln, Nebraska, and Susan Gourley, she's superintendent of Lincoln Public Schools, as in Lincoln, Nebraska. She's a member of the Executive Committee of Urban Superintendents Association of America, and she's optimistic about the blueprint, but worried about punitive measures for underperforming schools. Superintendent Gourley, thank you very much for being with us.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for asking me to participate in the program today.
It's great to have you. First, give us a little picture of what your school district is like. Lincoln, Nebraska may bring to mind, an old Grant Wood painting, but you've got a pretty diverse school system there now.
Yes, we do. We are a school district of 35,000 students. We are a growing school district. This year, we had 1,000 new students join us. We are a site for both immigrants and refugees. On any given day in Lincoln Public Schools, we have children from over 60 countries who speak more than 60 different languages.
Okay, there's an update on life in Lincoln, Nebraska. First, what did you make of No Child Left Behind? Have you been working with it all right? Were you eager to get rid of it? How did you see it? And then what about the change ahead, Superintendent Gourley?
Well, we saw No Child Left Behind as having very honorable intentions. Every educator believes that every child can succeed. So we support that and did support that.
Mm-hmm.
We felt, though, under No Child Left Behind that, as previous speakers have mentioned, it was very punitive, it was very prescriptive, and the end result was a further divide between the rich and the poor in our country.
Now, why? I thought it was supposed to do just the opposite.
Well, the privatization of it. You know, your last caller talked about making it a for-profit venture.
You mean the inroads of charter schools? Is that what you mean? Or private schools generally?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I would tell you that we don't have charter schools in Nebraska. They're mm-hmm. not allowed under Nebraska law, mm-hmm. nor do we have any private schools other than parochial schools in our community. I think that speaks to the quality of the public school system. Our community is very proud of its public education system here in Lincoln. But the punitive elements of No Child Left Behind were troublesome to us. So we are very pleased with the current administration's blueprint for reform. We think it has many honorable and goals and elements. We think that it, in fact, is a great document to take us forward as we improve the education of all children. We applaud the efforts. We think mm-hmm. it will help reform and transform our public system. And there are many things we like. We support raising academic standards. We believe every child should be proficient. And we think that data is important. We use data daily. Data helps us as we look at what do we want our children to learn? How will we know when they've learned it? What will we do for those who have succeeded, who are ready to move forward, and what will we do for those who have not?
The Superintendent, so you like raised standards, and we don't doubt your intentions, but if you take away some of the punitive aspect, take away some of the consequences of not hitting those standards, doesn't that take away some incentive, some, you know, iron push to get it done?
Well, I think that if you look at the blueprint for reform and you see some of the things that are laid out, I think that those will go a long way. I think those are really what will give the power and the strength to the plan. You know, one of the things we're concerned about is mm-hmm. the school turnaround grants. We're concerned that they will become, as AYP was for No Child Left Behind, a flashpoint, if you will, that they'll detract from the quality of the rest of the proposal. So that's a concern we have. So we're very interested in the details that come out.
No doubt. Jonathan Gourley, what do you hear in Superintendent Gourley's reception for this? Is this what it's likely to get from superintendents around the school? That heats off a little bit, they've got more flexibility, The talk of high standards is there. So, you know, what's not to like if you're a superintendent?
Right, exactly. But I think that I think one of the things that's missing there, and I think parents and I think, you know, there's a general sense that the charter school movement, while it's imperfect, has injected a kind of a good sort of note of market competition into the school system.
On your toes, everybody.
Exactly. And I think that there is evidence coming out. It's sort of all over the map. But I think in many ways, charter schools have actually turned out better than a lot of people thought. They haven't just creamed off the top kids. There is some evidence that kids are doing well. And I think it just does create a sense of competition, which I think is probably good for the system. And
they don't
the
even have them in Nebraska. But just with Catholic schools, though, that Superintendent Gourley is saying, you know, it didn't create greater equity. It sounds as though she's saying there was some creaming off to private schools, and the public schools left to deal with tougher cases.
Right. Well, this is the whole problem.
I'm sorry.
Am I wrong?
Yes, no,
okay.
We have not had a creaming off. We have always had those parochial school choices for families who wish to have those choices.
Well, then how did it make education less equitable?
Well, my comment about that was for the entire country. I hear that
okay.
from my colleagues.
Okay.
In
Can
other
I jump
states.
In on a couple points?
Yes, please, Charles.
3 points. One, the Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, is a former urban superintendent, so he's been on the other end of this, and I think that's why the reforms he's proposing are so reasonable and there's a consensus around them. Second, Nebraska is an interesting case. When No Child Left Behind was passed, Nebraska and one other state were given a waiver that they didn't have to do statewide testing. And over the course of No Child Left Behind, state legislators from Lincoln and other places lobbied to have statewide testing so that poor minority kids from places like Lincoln mm-hmm. wouldn't be held to lower standards than kids from the rest of the state.
Mm-hmm.
The state fought that, but they prevailed, and now they have a statewide testing system that compares apples and apples. If you talk to civil rights leaders throughout the country, they like this law. They don't think it's perfect, but they feel they have much more leverage.
The new blueprint that would be law if it's passed.
Mm-hmm. Both current law and the new blueprint. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're concerned about details, but they want to stick with this general principle of data disaggregation, which means looking at poor and minority students in the context of more advantaged students, and they're not going to give up that leverage easily.
Susan Gourley, do you expect that your political representatives will be supportive of this new blueprint being put forward by the Obama administration?
Well, we are encouraging them to support it. Our delegation has always been supportive of increased rigor and increased support for public education. We're going to encourage them to support this. We support it. We think it is an incredibly strong plan. We, as I said, we have some concerns about the turnaround school grants. We would like the administration to consider, as was pointed out by the American Association of School Administrators, that they make that fifth turnaround option, which is a research-based intervention model, which is now going to be reserved for reward districts. We'd like them to consider that for turnaround schools.
Is turnaround schools, is that the same as race to the top? Is that, I haven't got this mastered yet, Ms. Gourley.
Well, turnaround schools are the 5% that are to be identified.
Oh, these are the failing schools. Okay.
Yes,
okay.
These are what they call persistently low-achieving schools. And I think when you look at the blueprint for reform, it can appear to be a very small part of the proposal. But when we recognize that our most challenging schools, and this goes to the mm-hmm. point you were just making, Tom, mm-hmm. our most challenging situations are where we have our neediest children, our poorest children. And that's where we often see that great pervasive achievement gap that we've all been working so hard on.
But isn't that where we most need the effort? I mean, under No Child Left Behind,
exactly, and that's why we should be using sound research-based interventions. That's why we need to, an earlier speaker mm-hmm. said, we don't know what works. Well, we do know what works. A rigorous curriculum works, mm-hmm. effective instruction, intervention supports. And I think what we have found is that intervention supports, both academic and personal, make a huge difference for our students. They are extremely powerful.
But if you don't call out, forgive me, Ms. Gurley, but if you don't call out even the lowest 5%, I mean, No Child Left Behind, as I understood, might have put a failing tag on 50% of schools in some areas. If you don't call out even the lowest 5%, then what's your leverage?
Well, I think focusing on the lowest 5 is a good thing to do. I don't think anyone, I haven't heard any educator who takes, from any educator who takes exception to that.
But you called it a flashpoint, you said.
But I think it's those four remedies that we would just ask them to look at, that fifth one, which is using research-based strategy.
Mm-hmm.
We would like to see that incorporated in. We think school districts here in Lincoln, Nebraska, we think that school districts should have options to deal with turnaround schools. Just as the secretary says, one size does not fit all. One solution. So we would just ask to have that extended, not to eliminate those other four, but to add this research-based intervention program as a fifth option.
Susan Gurley, superintendent with Lincoln Public Schools in Lincoln, Nebraska. It's great to have you with us. You're really the voice of the front lines there, and we're grateful to you for your time. Jonathan Charles, I have so many callers, and I just haven't come to them. There's so much to take on board here. Virginia Beach, Virginia, and Sherry. Sherry, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom and everybody.
Hi.
Having observed toddlers and young children, I think that our entire education system, the actual way we teach, by putting children in rows and having basically a lecturer, is doomed for failure. Children don't learn that way. They're bored to death. They hate it. That's the main reason why we keep trying to fix the leaky boat. But it's sinking because, as the last guest said, we need to do some real research on how children actually learn.
You know, you may be right, but there's an awful lot of children in other countries who sit in rows and end up with better scores than American kids. What's that about, Sherry?
Well, because the whole education system is designed for competition. Those who can handle it do well. Those who can't hate it. And I think that children love to learn. That's been my observation. Children love to learn.
Yeah,
they
boy.
They're learning machines. And there's no reason why we can't make it fun, why we can't keep music inclusive in it, why we can't. And I also disagree with separating kids by grades, by age, because it's been proven that older kids will help younger kids, like in, let's say, a math learning center where there are different ages.
I would love to go in and tap that love of learning. That is for sure. No doubt about it. Sherry, thanks. Steve in Arlington, Massachusetts. Steve, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom. I'm concerned because I don't hear the interest in teachers, how teachers get better, what teachers know. Threatening teachers, you don't threaten people to get better. And I cannot fathom why the administration does not look at teachers as belonging to a craft and profession that wants to get better instead of threatening them in the absence of their, quote, getting better. Why is there no talk about the professional identity of teachers?
The professional identity. Charles, let me read one Facebook comment, and I'll give it to you. Judy on that front says, a little different angle, but she says, the great problem is that too much burden is being put on teachers. The best teacher in the world can't help a student who's not motivated outside of the classroom to do the work. From Judy, but you hear our caller saying, let's treat them as professionals and help them do what they want to do.
I suggest that your caller read the blueprint itself because it does embody the things he outlined. Look, teachers are in a tough position. They go through training programs that don't prepare them for teaching reading, identifying learning disabilities, classroom management. They're thrown into the toughest situations their first couple years. High course load, tough schools. That's not good for them. It's not good for the kids. They don't necessarily learn the best habits during those years. They're not given a lot of support. And then they face an accountability system that wants them to produce results. Some of those can be given help. And get better. Some are going to be great anyway, but there are a group of teachers at the bottom who were led into the profession through a very easy route, are not going to make it, and I think we do kids a disservice if we ignore that minority, but that small segment of teachers who are in the toughest schools where the kids need quality teaching the most, and they might not be suitable for the teaching profession no matter what anybody does.
Jonathan, the stakes are pretty high here. We have seen these numbers. President Obama cited them just recently in his weekend radio address, of the U.S. not being in a great competitive position on the education level of our citizens and our youth. Do you see, if this passes and we look, 2, 5, 8, 10 years down the line, does this take us in a different direction from No Child Left Behind that will be palpable? Will we feel like there's a different regime, a different reality around our education?
Well, I worry that it will feel like a softening of goals that we set. I think that one of the concerns is that there is an educational crisis that doesn't just affect poor kids and underachieving kids, that even our top kids are not doing as well compared to top kids in other places. And I think, you know, as with healthcare, if you make it only about the uninsured, people who have health insurance start to say, well, why does it matter to me? Mm-hmm. And I think one of the challenges that Obama faces here is to show that this is a program that's going to help everybody. Everybody from, you know, the underachieving kids in Lincoln, Nebraska to the overachieving kids in Scarsdale. And unless Obama is able to sort of persuade people that this is going to help everyone, I think the politics of it could begin to chip away. And the unions may chip away at part of it. The Republicans may chip away at part of it. And we may actually lose some of the urgency that No Child Left Behind, for all its faults, did create in the educational system.
Well, it's a front that comes right into our lives and families and certainly into our future. We will all be watching very, very closely. We're grateful to you each for helping us begin to see what's coming here. Charles Barone, at the Director of Federal Policy at Democrats for Education Reform, who was at the hearings yesterday with Arne Duncan. Thank you very much, Charles, for being with us.
Great show.
And Jonathan Kaufman, Education Editor at Bloomberg News. Great to have you, Jonathan.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. This is On Point.